Hello, everyone. Yes, it's really that time of the year again. Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, is just days away, and I'm here backstage at the High Holy Days. So come with us for a look behind the scenes on this Rabbiting On special.
Rabbiting On. Rabbiting On.
Hello and welcome to Rabbiting On. It is, as always, a huge pleasure to be joined by my wonderful colleagues, Rabbi Miriam Berger and Rabbi Robin Ashworth-Steed. I'm Rabbi Debbie Young-Summers. And how are Miriam and Robin this week?
I'm a little bit like, rabbit in the headlights. How is it so soon?
Yeah, it's so stressful, isn't it? Just so soon. And summer holidays straight into... And not only into the usual chaos of High Holy Days, but into navigating multi-access services of like we're doing on Zoom and in person. And it's incredibly hard to lead a service and how I've got the setup anyway. It's a completely new world, as Rosh Hashanah is meant to be, because we're returning to a new year, you know, all that stuff. But it feels particularly intense, doesn't it?
We've got the added bonus of kind of that piece of how do you cope with your 10-year-old who's being very grown up about the fact that his first 2 days back are Rosh Hashanah and therefore, won't be able to be with his class and with his new teacher and everything else till day three. And just one of those, like, what does it mean to be a British Jew? And some of those hurdles that you have to learn to overcome at a young age. And that thing that I really think I'd got a little bit complacent about the High Holy Days, because you know, at the beginning, when you first go into your community, I remember kind of sitting and reading through the liturgy again and again to make sure it was all fluent and, you know, every post-it note and kavanah and everything else written out in full. And, you know, I would say by a couple of years ago, I was coasting through the High Holy Days. And then, you know, last year, obviously, the machzor was ripped up and we were given a blank piece of paper and we were told, OK, make the High Holy Days in lockdown. And then we're doing, you know, year two, major creativity of what does it mean to find an appropriate venue where people feel safe and how to do the High Holy Days in a way that works in this year's reality.
And this is the earliest that Rosh Hashanah can be, bar one day in the calendar. So we've got all that added pressure. And you know,
then I'm going to be grateful for Monday. Monday's day of preparation is just going to be an added bonus because it could have been worse. That's what you're saying.
It could have been Sunday. But, you know, we would normally start really planning the High Holy Days, possibly, you know, a bit after Shavuot. But this is, you know, our lay leaders and our professional team have been meeting and planning since Pesach. Mm-hmm. And that was true last year as well. I think for 2 years on the road, you know, there's so much that's still unknown about what we're facing in the coming weeks. And we're doing everything we can to plan, but ultimately we don't really know what's going to happen, who's going to show up, you know, have people booked and they won't come. Will people all try and book in the last minute? There's so much that's unknown. And if anyone, God forbid, has a positive test in the next few days, you know, that's disaster.
It's kind of fascinating, isn't it, that I'm obsessed, as I'm sure loads of people are, with the book that Alan Liu, Zichron Olive Racha, wrote, This Is Real and You're Completely Unprepared. It's about the High Holy Days, and it completely transformed the way I saw the High Holy Days. And he really explains, you know, understanding it, that you're really coming face to face with mortality. You know, you dress on Yom Kippur as if you're
shroud.
Dead. Yeah, in your shroud, you're not eating or drinking, and completely transformed the way I saw it. This year, however, I feel like I really get it. Like the sense of like vulnerability of like all the apprehension people are feeling about their own health concerns and going into the building. And I feel the apprehension and anxiety in the community of what it means to be in High Holy Days. That last year was different. We didn't have that coming into the building because we were all in our homes, you know, sheltered in a way. And really like the theme of High Holy Days is just really present in our bodies and in our minds, and trying to just be with that a little bit and not get, you know, it's very tricky.
It's a really, really beautiful way of approaching the High Holy Days, but it's also a very Ashkenazi approach to the High Holy Days. If you look at the Sephardi custom, particularly around Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur is a day of joy and celebration, and the music is uplifting and is positive and joyous, because this is our chance for a second go, right? The slate is wiped clean. We will be forgiven, we're told. And it's you know, this beautiful opportunity that we're offered. I think a lot of people that love that tune right at the start of Ne'ilah, and we think, oh, we're getting towards the end. El Nara, Alila. And there's this sort of approaching positivity. That's a Spanish and Portuguese tune. And a lot of the tunes through the day, well before Ne'ilah, are also much more positive and uplifting. And I think that's a lot of what our High Holy Days are about this year, is actually trying to provide a huge variety of options for different people and their different needs. Because coming in person isn't going to work for everyone. Being online isn't going to work for everyone. And it's, how do we create options for people to be able to do something that's meaningful for them over the High Holy Days, whichever approach they're taking?
I think that piece around holding those different emotions as well is really important, that we have very much focused on that sense of wanting, you know, we were desperate to build community and to be physically together as much as we could for as many people as we could. And that's why we've done the like outside option to try and do that as safely as possible. But that thing of, what emotions does that stir? The kind of, is that going to mean that that creates a real sense of joy and positivity because finally we're here and we can see each other and we're together? Or does it exacerbate the kind of the feelings of insecurity and anxiety and vulnerability? And all of these emotions that are stirred by the liturgy, you know, on Rosh Hashanah, that we write ourselves in the book of life, and on Yom Kippur that fate is sealed. And like, really, that's, you know, that grating kind of tone of passing before God on Yom Kippur, and who will live and who will die. We've been living that all year. And actually, you know, I'm angry by that liturgy now. I don't want to feel that vulnerability. And how do we hold that tension? You know, when you look out into the community and you know what people have been through this year, and then they're faced with those words.
I've really struggled with that liturgy for many years. I find it really troubling, that image. But I've heard other rabbis teach it so beautifully and understand it so differently. And again, it's that sense of, there are so many different ways into this. But yeah, I find who shall live and who shall die, all that stuff is, it's really troubling when you lose someone in that year. It's very painful. And that's part of coming out of this, is also that mental health impact of what we've been living through. It's not just about our physical health now. Coming together and being a community is also about responding to our mental health needs. So how do you guys mentally prepare and get ready for the High Holy Days? Do you read Lou every year?
I don't read that book. Well, yes, sometimes I do. This year I haven't. I feel like this year, everything that I usually do to prepare hasn't quite happened, or it's happening in a rushed way. So usually, you know, I get, these are kind of practical things that help to clean out the cobwebs to get ready. So I get the car cleaned, I have my hair cut. I usually do things around the house in like a month beforehand, in a sense of just like cleansing and getting ready and buying new clothes and that kind of thing. I find that really helpful in terms of getting into a spiritual space. It's like part of the spiritual prep. I felt like I've not had time to do that this year. I'm having my hair cut like the day before Erev Rosh Hashanah, but I did fit it in, which I'm happy about. But I mean, for me, I find one of the benefits of our job is that I have to turn into Jewish liturgy, obviously, and the calendar all the time. So even though I'm feeling quite stressed and, you know, underprepared in some ways, I have to prepare a Shabbat service, and it's about Elul. So in that sense, I kind of have to open up a book and look for, right, where are we? What does this mean? What meaning can we get from it in this time? And I find that preparation of services can sometimes be really helpful to get into the headspace of where I need to be for it. And I still love my colouring pencils, post-it notes, you know, all of that stuff. I like everything super pretty and prepared for going in, and that's kind of my preparation for it.
How about you, Miriam?
So, Debbie, I know you've been the queen of mikveh education for a very long time, and I've jumped on your bandwagon in the last few years. But I am doing something new this year as a kind of a new preparation, which is taking a group of members to Hampstead Ponds just the day before Erev Rosh Hashanah and doing a piece there around kind of endings and new beginnings, and what does it mean to approach the new year in a very kind of physical way. And I'm doing it as much for me as I am for them, but I think it will be a really interesting new way of being able to prepare for the High Holy Days and take it in a different place than the, you know, endless cue sheets and the massive kind of event planning piece, which becomes so much part of it. You know, I think for a lot of people, they think the clergy kind of just turn up and open the machzor piece, or that we spend hours, you know, in a dark study kind of reading and writing our sermons. And actually there's this whole other piece, which is creating a huge event. And because we're doing this kind of piece in a new way with lots of technology and in a new kind of venue, trying to hold kind of screens and stages and sound and all of that kind of thing, I think Sunday will be a really interesting way of being able to say, how do we prepare in a different way? But I think I'm also slightly scarred in terms of High Holy Day preparation, because I was in my first year at Leo Beck when 9/11 happened. And I had obviously, as students do, prepared very far in advance. I had every word written and everything kind of, you know, ready to go. And an elderly, wonderful kind of colleague who I was going to Wimbledon Reform for my first service straight after 9/11, and had obviously written my sermon and everything else. And he said to me, "You're just a student. Don't change anything. Nobody expects you to respond to this. This is more than you need to talk about. Just don't worry." And I actually think it was the worst piece of advice I could have been given. And I know I still hold on to that thing of, that's not why people came to shul that year. You know, that day, people needed us to be responding to what was going on around, and not my frivolous sermon of, I don't know what I even spoke about. And so I do hold on to the fact that actually, however much preparation we do, we have to be in the moment as well and responding to exactly what the world throws at us whenever the world throws, you know, its stuff at us.
And of course, this year is quite similar to the year in 2001 when 9/11 happened. First of all, it's the 20th anniversary, and we can't not talk about that. But I think, so we're having a special Shabbat service on Shabbat Shiva, which is 9/11. But I think I remember really strongly all these strange stories that emerged after 9/11, because it happened in the 10 days. It's not always in the 10 days, but it is this year, and it was that year. The 10 days are the 10 days that we walk between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, days of focused prayer and repentance. And lots of Jews who are sort of more observant might go to synagogue every morning of those 10 days. And I remember these stories that emerged after 9/11 of how, oh, well, the Jews were responsible because lots of them weren't in the Twin Towers yet. They weren't at work yet. And they were saved because they'd gone to shul to pray for the 10 days. And of course, lots of Jews were there, did lose their lives. But the conspiracy theories that can evolve so fast from something completely coincidental, it was devastating at the time. I mean, my memories of that time are still really clear. I was a student field worker for RSGB, as it then was. And we were at our first UJS educational conference at Carmel College, where there was like one TV on the entire site in the caretaker's home. No one had smartphones yet. And just during a session, everyone started getting these text messages from home, including me. My brother was sat in front of the TV texting me that World War III was starting. Mm. And my colleague from one of the other movements, who was a new student field worker, who just arrived in London from New York, where she'd been studying at JTS, was, you know, that was her home being bombed in front of her. So I drove her back to London to be with her people, really, to be with community, because that's what we need at these times. Mm. However awful things are, we want to be together usually.
Yeah. I mean, Gabriel came back from school. His first day was yesterday. And he'd learnt about 9/11 for the first time. His teacher had kind of explained it. So he was telling me what he thought had happened, and we kind of unpicked it a little bit. And he just couldn't get his mind around what had happened, why it happened, who had done it, why they killed themselves, you know, why didn't they jump out of a plane before, what was going on. He was so confused about it, and trying to explain like what fundamentalism is and what extremism is. And it, I don't know, I was kind of reflecting on what you were saying, Miriam, about your first experience of that sermon going in. And it's always this tricky balance I find in services of wanting to create a refuge, really, in a sense, from the outside world. And, you know, I think partly music can do that because it can comfort and soothe and, you know, talk to emotion without having to name things. But at the same time, and an American rabbi said this, I don't know who, what, I've forgotten her name, but said that prayer is spiritual sustenance for the revolution, right? So it's not that it's separate from it, but you're able to get what you need to then go out and act in the world. So it's not about ignoring what's going on in the world, and it has to be spoken about. And it's that challenge of the balance of how much do we talk about COVID? Like, how do we help people process that without it being everywhere and being able to give people the space to experience what they need in that space, or wanting a break from it? Like, and that, and, you know, how do you hold the anger? Like Miriam, you were saying, I'm so angry at this liturgy. And I know that we already, because we've only just started going back to shul at Jackson's Row. And there's this like nostalgic return. It's like, oh, I can't wait to get back into synagogue. This is going to be everything. I remember how special it used to be. And you get there and there are now TV monitors there. We're sitting separately. You know, most of the community is on Zoom still, and it feels different. And there's like a kind of sense of disappointment and, oh, we're still in the world of the pandemic. And that is being experienced like over and over again. And it reminds us of one of our teachers, Sheila Shulman, Zichron Alivracha, Rabbi Sheila, would always quote this line from Ursula Le Guin, a science fiction writer. You can go home again as long as you know that home is a place you've never been, which of course is Teshuvah, which is returning of like the High Holy Days. And it seems so apt again this year of like, and with the 9/11 anniversary, there is something about that, about the world has shifted. It, you know, it is the same world in a sense, but also everything's changed and shifted. And how do you hold comfort and gentleness alongside that kind of fragility and the cracks in the earth as well?
I think there's also really interesting questions about where we feel that vulnerability. I think it's before the pandemic, High Holy Days were always sort of, you know, high security moments when we became very strict about who was coming in and who was going out. And there's a new vulnerability that we now feel, and trying to plan for that as well. You know, it just takes so much attention from so many different people. Yeah. And all these kind of amazing lay leaders who are alongside the professionals are giving up their evenings and daytimes to make all of this happen. It's an incredible feat, really.
Yeah, there are so many people working so hard to make it a meaningful experience as well. I have to say that I had a moment of extreme vulnerability on the way this morning. I was dropping Gabriel off at school and rushing back, because we meet just after the school run, don't we? So I was going, making sure I get back. And I got into the car just to text someone, to say, one of you, to say I'm going to be a little bit late because of the school run. And my phone had turned on to SOS. So it had sent messages to all of my emergency contacts saying, there's been an emergency. Here's the pinpoint location of where it happened. Please, you know, help. And my family were calling me, and they hadn't been able to get in touch for 30 minutes, and, you know, went to strange places of thinking what had happened to, like, a car accident, to me being abducted, which says a lot. And it wasn't, I think, because we're in, one, a pandemic, two, I think the world feels like it's shifting, like Afghanistan, also linked to 9/11, there feels like there's something really destabilizing and terrifying about the rise of the Taliban, or the, you know, the rise again of the Taliban, and being in the High Holy Day mode. That hit me so much more than I think it would have done normally. Like, normally it would be quite a funny story to tell. This time it feels like, you know, Una Tane Toke for Yom Kippur liturgy, the liturgy that we sing over the High Holy Days, who by fire, who by water. Like, you're a thin strand away from it. But I was speaking to someone yesterday who lost his wife very young and very recently. And he was talking about the piece you mentioned, Miriam, about in Deuteronomy, about choose life. I put before you life and death, choose life. I put before you blessings and curse, choose blessings. And he was saying that with all the grief, one of the ways, what he wants to live his life fully, because he can see what that death, you know, has done to his family and how precious life is as well. And I think that kind of goes back to what you were saying, Debbie, like hopefully the High Holy Days, that's where we get to, right? That we face mortality and we can hold the grief in some way and the pain and be alongside it, but we get to choose life because we come out choosing life. We come out renewed and able to put an, you know, the next step forward and see the world anew, rather than it being something that takes us deep down into the vulnerability and terrified of what might happen. The point is that we're renewed and we go towards Sukkot and Simchat Torah. You know, we're kind of brought on a bit of a journey, really.
We've started doing this like for a number of months, this parallel piece of our prayers for healing and a Shechechianu moment, that it feels very much like that's where that this High Holy Days kind of is on that precipice as well, that there's the kind of the prayers for healing, the acknowledgement that we're still very much in this and feeling vulnerable. And as you say, the world does just feel like an uncertain, unstable place, whether it's the environment and nature, whether it's humankind. And, you know, I love Gabriel's sort of sense of how do you even start to comprehend that kind of evil, right? That actually he should always be confused that there should be anybody, anyone in the world that can hold that kind of level of hatred and evil. And that's so much the one side of things. And on the other side, this like constant need for the affirmation that we are the survivors in this, that we are the ones who are still here, and that in some way that gives us even more of an obligation to live and to keep living and to enjoy life and to find those moments of blessing and acknowledge all of those tiny things that we used to take for granted for so long and now are wrapped up with such beauty and such joy because they've been denied us for so long, or we've just seen what life is like without them. And I think if we can achieve a High Holy Day journey that allows people to rock between those two places and to feel that they are managing to hold both of those, I think it's quite extraordinary. I think there'll be many people in the community almost kind of dealing with a sort of post-traumatic stress kind of attitude to this. And yet also we're still kind of in it. You know, I'm really aware of what it must feel like for our school leadership teams and our teachers to be walking back into the classroom this term. And with that uncertainty of what does this look like now? You know, as a synagogue, I was fascinated to hear Debbie saying they'd started planning for this High Holy Days. You know, their lay leaders had met during Pesach. My lay leaders would have loved me to have been, you know, part of those discussions much, much earlier than we were having them. And I kept saying, we can't plan. We can't plan. We don't know what it's going to be like. You know, let's hold off. Let's wait for the certainty. The certainty never came. So perhaps the planning was a little more delayed than it needed to be. But that thing of we just live our lives now with such uncertainty.
Which I suppose is what a lot of the High Holy Days is about, right? There is so much uncertainty and we hold that through the liturgy, through the unknown, and trying to understand ourselves and take time to think about who we're going to be despite that uncertainty. One of the ways that I like to prepare for Rosh Hashanah is a ritual called soul candles, which is the making of candles in memory of those who've gone and also to pray for the living. And it's a ritual that came out of the shtetls and was lost for many years because we left our graveyards, and part of the ritual was to measure out the wick of the candles around the graveyards. But I often think that Elul, the month we're in before Rosh Hashanah, is this time of visiting our dead, partly to remind ourselves of the uncertainty of life. And we, you know, we can't plan everything. We don't necessarily choose when we're born and when we die, but also that we want to live our lives in honor and in, you know, honoring the work and the memories of those who've gone before us. And I think that's even more sort of exacerbated this year with so much that's been lost for people, whether it's loved ones and relatives or actually freedoms and different sacrifices that we've made. And using the High Holy Days in a way to come to terms with those losses and that grief that we're feeling, because there's a lot of grief that we revisit during Elul. And I think there are other griefs now. There's 9/11, but there's also these other losses of the last 18 months that we need to take time to process.
I find that so powerful, Debbie. I mean, on Sunday, I'm going with my mum to visit my granddad's grave, which happens to all of our other family members aren't in Manchester, but he is in Bury nearby, and we're going to go and visit his grave. And it's really interesting when you said about honouring the memory of them. And if I think about that generation, and we still have many people in that generation in our community, my granddad, you know, as many of them did, went to war when he was a young boy, was sent across the globe on a boat. And I've actually got a quotation of the psalm in front of me that was his favourite psalm, because it talked about calm waters in a stormy sea, Mikolot Mayim Rabim. And it was his favourite psalm because it spoke to him of that terror of being on a boat in a storm by himself, thinking, I'm going to die. And, you know, he got shot, he got TB when he was out there, you know, imagining what they went through. And I often, it's actually interesting, at the beginning of the lockdown, I went to so many Holocaust survivors' writings to honour them, but also to get to learn the lessons from them about how to deal with such, I mean, that was, you know, such immense tragedy and hate on a scale that is very different and completely different to what we're going through in the pandemic. But honouring the memory and the lessons that can be learned from them and standing on their shoulders is so important. And thinking about our Machzorim, our prayer books, of course, are written by, well, not our new ones so much, but the one we still use for Yom Kippur, are written by mainly the men who came out, the rabbis who came out of the Holocaust, who were teaching post-Holocaust theology. How do we stay together? What does this look like to be Jewish? How do you deal with deep suffering? And I think for me, that's why our Machzorim are so powerful, because they are responding to something that needs responding to. You know, they didn't shy away from it, but they were having that conversation. And I think even more so now, you know, I think, oh, should I bring different liturgy and creative liturgy? And like, it's all there actually, because they're having the conversation that needs to happen in a sense.
But I also think that's why it's so important that we are now working on a new Machzor, because it is a new generation and we are dealing with a new way of processing and moving past what it was to be the generation that survived, not to forget and not to continue to honour that memory, but actually we're moving into the generation that will decide essentially what meaning is drawn out for the next generation from all of this. And we saw with the new Siddur that was, it's already not new, but I still call it the new Siddur, it was published in 2008. You know, there was a shift from a book that was filled with etchings of all these destroyed synagogues that were no longer with us, replaced by beautiful modern artwork that would help us focus on the prayers in a different way. And, you know, things do shift and change, and our grief shifts and changes. And I'm really looking forward, actually, to seeing what the new generation Machzor will look like in the next few years. It's sort of almost there, I believe.
That's exciting.
I think, for me, there's a real hope that people use the High Holy Days maybe differently this year. But I know for a lot of people, all that we've been talking about is really clergy. And for them, you know, Rosh Hashanah is actually about the best honey cake recipe, you know, where they're having dinner, lunch, tea, whatever it is, with which members of the family on which days and that kind of thing. And I hope, I really hope that that isn't lost for them, and that sense of High Holy Days as a kind of celebratory and family time is there for them as well. But I hope that part of this conversation has also made people sort of say, maybe I need something this High Holy Days above and beyond that. Maybe I want to look for a service I can go to, or study sessions, or, you know, whether it's a late night slichot service on Saturday night, or whether it's a jolly and fun, you know, experience for kids, or whether it's a space to process the year that's passed. I hope people will look online at reformjudaism.org.uk and find out where there is either a synagogue near them doing those things that they can book into and turn up to, or what Zoom services, streaming services are available to them, and what educational resources and are available to them online, and also to find the gem of those Machzorim online and to kind of pour over them themselves, because it is all there. And I hope that you'll find it, reformjudaism.org.uk, And they can also find the past episodes of Rabbiting On if they need to catch up there as well.
Got a quiet moment through the hugging, you can just catch up on Rabbiting On. So do stay with us over the High Holy Days. We'll be here again with another episode in a couple of weeks. But for now, thank you so much for joining us. Shana Tova to you. A very sweet and hopeful new year from the Movement for Reformed Judaism and from all of us. I wish my colleagues and all of their wonderful lay leaders strength and a meaningful hagim. And we hope to see you all in a couple of weeks. Shana Tova, everybody.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.